Elliot Forrest here in for Leonard Lopate. From swing to bebop to Jimi Hendrix, Roy Haynes has seen and played with them all. Ever since, his virtuosic performance at the Apollo Theater earned him respect and fear of his peers. Roy Haynes has been an indomitable force. He's drummed for everyone from Charlie Parker to Sarah Vaughan to Miles Davis, even leading a band or two of his own. His style spans genres and decades and as always seems to test the bounds of just what is rhythmically possible. These, among many other reasons, are why he's been asked to kick off the fall season at Jazz at Lincoln Center on September 25th. He'll be performing with his own Fountain of Youth band and with an all-star supergroup featuring saxophonist Kenny Garrett, bassist Dave Holland, and pianist Daniello Perez, and trumpeter and Jazz at Lincoln Center artistic director Wynton Marsalis will be in the band as well. It is an honor to welcome Roy Haynes back to our show today. Good to see you.
Nice to see you. It's an honor to be here.
Opening up Jazz at Lincoln Center has become a true honor over the years. They really think twice and three times and four times before they pick that opening concert. How do you feel about that?
I feel good about it. Really good.
What were we going to hear that night? What are you going to play?
I'm going to play some good music. Duke Ellington used to say there are only two kinds of music. Good, and you know what the other one is.
So, I can imagine.
We're going to be good.
You grew up in Boston. Were you drumming there? How quickly did you pick up drumming?
I was drumming ever since I can remember. I had an older brother. There were four of us brothers. Mother and father were from Barbados, as it was called in the British West Indies. And my older brother, he had a pair of drumsticks around the house. I don't remember him playing drums. I know he also had a ukulele, a trumpet, and that whole thing. And I just started playing those drums, playing with the drumsticks, because I didn't have drums from the beginning, playing on my mother's dining room dishes and breaking them up and that whole thing.
She was happy about that.
Yeah, she was happy when I started making a little money. You know, I had to pay her back for that.
When did you get your first real trap set then?
I got a snare drum first. A friend of mine picked up a snare drum someplace. I never did find out where he got it. And
You didn't want to ask?
I don't think I wanted to ask because he's not living now, so I can talk about him.
I see. Okay.
He was kind of dangerous, a little young guy. And there was some cymbals in that trap case and drumsticks, naturally, wire brushes, and the whole thing. So I got one piece at a time when I started playing with that little snare drum and the cymbals. Each week I would buy another piece, you know, bass drum, tom-toms, and that whole thing. That was probably very early 40s.
So you were a teenager playing in Boston. Was there much of a jazz scene in Boston at the time?
It was a big jazz scene in Boston. A lot of big bands, more so than small groups. A lot of the great older singers were around during that period. Music was very, very active in Boston.
And at some point, you decided to move to New York.
Well, what happened, the summer of 1945, I was playing down at Martha's Vineyard, you know, that's beyond Cape Cod in Massachusetts, and I got a special delivery letter that came to the local in Boston. They had two locals, 535, and I think the other one was local 9 or something. And my local was 535, and this man by the name of Lewis Russell, who was from New Orleans by way of Panama. He also played with King Oliver back in, I guess it was late 20s or 30s. He had heard about me and sent me this special delivery letter, told me how much he would pay me, and I told him I was interested in joining the band, but I couldn't go till after Labor Day. So he sent me a one-way train ticket.
And sweet.
I've been living in New York ever since.
And you were 17 at the time?
No, I was just 20.
Just 20.
Yes.
Still moving to New York City by yourself?
By myself.
That must have been a little daunting.
No, that was exciting. I wasn't a teenager. You know, I was a little...
You were ready to go.
...smart young man, you know.
So, and this is a time, too, when it wasn't just concerts. You were probably playing dance halls when people were dancing.
That's right. Savoy Ballroom, my first... gig here in New York after the Apollo Theater.
Was there a different level of excitement between playing, say, a straight concert where people are just sitting in chairs and people up and dancing?
Well, it was definitely exciting. Up in Harlem in those days, I mean, they were doing the Lindy Hop and all the other later dances, naturally, that would happen during that period.
So we referenced a story here about the Apollo Theater when you first came. What's the story? Why was that such a seminal moment for you?
Well, did you hear something about that?
I did hear something about that.
Well, I found out many years later that there were some of the older drummers that would catch the first show at the Apollo Theater, because lots of times a new drummer would come in with the band and he didn't have any experience with playing shows or something like that, or just making the band sound good. But I guess at that time I was ready. They told me many years later that when they heard me play that first tune, they said, "You might as well leave. This guy has got it." And I found out Panama Francis, who was one of the big drummers in that period, had told me the story about that.
You have worked with so many people, it's almost difficult to know where to start. But Lester Young, working with Lester Young, and keeping in mind he died in the late 50s, this goes back quite a way. What do you remember first about him?
Well, I also joined him at the Savoy Ballroom, and that was 1947. And after I played a couple of tunes with him then, he just looked over and came over to the drums and told me I was really swinging. If I wanted the job, I could have it. And I stayed with Lester Young for 2 years. Only reason I left was I think he was getting ready to go with Jazz the Philharmonic, Norman Granz's concert tour band. And I was getting a little popular around New York at that time. So I started playing down 52nd Street with different bands. In fact, that's the same year I joined Miles Davis, and then from Miles Davis to Charlie Parker.
Lester called you one of the two most original people that you ever knew. You called him and also Monk, Thelonious Monk. Why so original?
Well, both of those gentlemen, they have a way of playing their music, their own original style, and they dressed so different, and they talked different. You know, I never heard any people talk and dress and act like.
In what way? What kind of speech would caught your attention?
Well, you would really have to understand both of them, because they had their own languages, their own way of describing things. A lot of things that I can't say on the air now.
You know, or thank describe you. We do have FCC regulations.
So they were interesting people.
And the clothes are interesting. Did that affect your personal style as a dresser as well?
It didn't really affect my style, but it was interesting to see the way, you know, they were wearing clothes and the type of things, you know, that they were wearing.
I'm Elliot Forrest, in for Leonard Lopate with the legendary drummer Roy Haynes. You know, I was going to get to this a little bit later, but I think I just want to jump to it. You are in remarkable shape.
Thank you.
Can we say how old you are?
Of course. That's known all over the world, and a lot of the ladies, they don't really believe that, so they're telling me. So you can't be in your 80s.
85. Yeah, I know a lot of people who stretch the truth the other direction and want to be younger, so if they don't believe you, you're 85. Do you have any keys to this elixir of youth that you seem to carry around?
I get that question a lot. They'll ask, what is your secret or something like that? I'd say if it was a secret, I wouldn't tell you. Yeah. But I don't know. I don't know. Maybe the music and traveling, you know, I don't know.
I wonder if there's an obvious answer, because sometimes conductors live a long time because it's very physical. I wonder about actually just playing the drums has been, you know, cardiovascularly really good for you.
It could be. Yeah. I know a lot of drummers that died pretty young, though.
Depending on what you got involved in, how did you avoid all that? Because, you know, in addition to just trying to live healthy lives, a lot of drugs and problems in the jazz world, especially in the time period you grew up in. How did you stay away from that to keep yourself alive?
I don't know. I wanted to live on and, you know, continue to be happy in that whole thing, you know. And, you know, I'm not saying I was an angel.
I was going to guess that.
You were going to guess what? Tell me.
That you weren't an angel.
Okay. So you got your answers.
I think so. Let's talk about Charlie Parker, too. There's so many legends that you got to play with. What do you remember about him?
Oh, I remember a lot of things about him. You know, an exciting genius, you know. And we had some moments that, you know, I won't talk about on the air neither.
There's so much we can't talk about.
No, we can talk about a lot of a lot of things, you know. But with Charlie Parker during that period, we didn't really work steady You know, so I had a lot of time to do things with other people as well, you know.
You devoted a tribute album to him. Some must have been really special to want to do that.
Oh, yes. Yes, definitely.
You played Birdland with him?
We opened Birdland, the original Birdland, which was on Broadway. I think it was November 1949. Yes, I remember it well, because during that, they had something that they called Journey Through Jazz. They would start out with the original, maybe Dixieland, and go from that to whatever came to swing. And then from that to people like Lenny Tristano. And, oh, it was on and on. They had about five different groups. And during that time, there were usually five sets a night. They would start at 9 o'clock and end at 4 o'clock in the morning. You know, it was a very exciting period.
And Latin music, was that having an effect at that time period as well?
Well, they had Latin bands, not immediately at Birdland, but that was a big part of it, you know, later on in the first year and throughout the life of Birdland.
Was it tough to pick the songs for your tribute album to Charlie Parker?
No, it was no problem. People had music, you know.
You knew which ones you wanted, I mean.
Yeah, oh yeah, I knew what I wanted, exactly.
You have a nickname.
I have several.
Yeah, you have several. How many of them can we talk on the air? Tells me we can't talk about all of them.
Not that many, though.
Snap Crackle.
Snap Crackle has to do with my approach, especially the snare drum, that crackling, popping sound. You know, I think that's where that came from.
And was there someone specific who gave you that to
George Shearin and his bass player at the time, Al McKibben. He used to say it sounded like snap, crackle.
Is there a certain rhythm you can tap out for us, or was just the way you hit the snare drum?
Well, the way I would hit the snare drum. I don't want to hit the microphone or nothing now.
Probably a good idea. Is there something that distinguishes your personal playing style?
Well, a lot of people say there is. They can tell right away that it's Roy Haynes, you know, but I don't know.
You don't break it down too much in your own head. You don't know what it is.
I got my ideas. It's not that easy to explain, though.
And the influences as a drummer, who influenced you?
There were many drummers. The main one was Papa Joe Jones, who played with the Count Basie Band. I love Sid Catlett a lot, also Cozy Cole. And I listened to all the drummers, but those were some of my favorites.
You have a great compilation album called A Life in Time, The Roy Haynes Story, and Snap Crackle is on that. So let's take a listen to that. We're going to take a little break. Elliot Forrest in for Leonard Lopate. We'll be right back with Roy Haynes.
Roy Haynes.
Elliot Forrest in for Leonard Lopate. My guest is Roy Haynes. He'll be opening up the Jazz at Lincoln Center concerts on September 25th. There you are playing with the great Sarah Vaughan.
Yes.
Calling out your name.
Yes.
Do you like hearing your own recordings?
Sometimes. Yeah, usually I do, though. Yeah.
How has your style changed over the years, or do you think it has?
Well, not really. Well, probably like the seasons. You know, I'm hot for a while and I cool down, you know, in the spring and whatever. A lady in Chicago many, many years ago said my music reminded her of the four seasons, you know, and I took that as a compliment. Sometimes you say something like that and people say, well, what the heck did she really mean? You know, but I think I understood what she was saying.
Let's talk about some of these other performers you've performed with, particularly these ladies. We heard Sarah Vaughan. Were they different as in being in these bands and playing, say, for Ella or Billie Holiday or Sarah? What were the differences?
Well, Sarah, being the youngest of the three, I kind of knew where she was going, you know, where she wanted to go musically. And with Ella, she was a hard swinger. That was the hardest of the three.
What does that mean, a hard swinger?
Well, she swung, you know, very hard. She'd be up there sweating, you know, a fast song like Flying Home or whatever, scatting and that whole thing, you know. Wasn't always easy.
Right, we're working it hard.
Yeah, I'm working it hard.
Yeah.
And Sarah sang some fast tunes, too, but she was more of what they would say maybe the bebop style. Ella Fitzgerald was like the Count Basie band, you know. And Billie Holiday was more or less like the Lester Young saxophone style. In fact, they were very close as hangout buddies back in, I would imagine, the 30s.
And was there a really great fit, a female singer that you really felt like was the best fit for you?
Well, maybe Sarah at the time.
Sounds great.
We're close to the same age, you know.
There's a bio for you online that it's fair to say that
Why are you laughing already at that?
Yeah.
What does it say?
It says it's fair to say that Roy Haynes has played with everyone. Is that fair to say to you? Do you think about it that way?
Well, I play with a lot of them. I know that. Yes, that's cool.
Tell me about listening, because you probably listen different than most people. You probably hear musicians, hear music, probably hear other drummers as well as other singers differently. What do you listen for when you hear other jazz artists before you jump in and play with them?
I listen to everything, you know, their feeling, how they're telling a story, painting that picture. You know, there's a lot I listen to. Today we have a lot of vocalists. I don't know if we can call them all vocalists, you know. But it's different today than it was years ago. I mean, for the mass, you know, listener. You know, like people, I was watching something on TV the other night about what is this thing going on where they're voting for this person? What is that called?
An election.
An election. Wow, you're very fast, yeah. Man. You get some points there.
Is that what you meant? Or you mean about these singers? You mean like American Idol? Is that
you know what I meant.
Oh, okay. Oh, no, I didn't actually. Now I know what you mean. All right, yeah. There's all these contests for singers.
Oh, yeah.
Right,
yeah. Some of them, you know, a lot of them cool, interesting and everything, but it's still not the same. People like Ella Fitzgerald, Sarah Vaughan, to me, man, they were some serious singers.
And today, you talk about American Idol. Who do you listen to today? Who really strikes your fancy?
I don't play records. So whatever they play on the radio, you know, if I like it, I like it. And if I don't dig it too much, you know, I don't.
Jazz, like classical music, oftentimes is sort of pegged as dying or tough or a waning audience. I'm not sure that's such the case in either of those musical genres, to tell you the truth, because I see a lot of young people are involved in it. But from your perspective, do you feel like jazz is thriving? Do you feel like there is trouble with it? What do you think?
I don't think there's any trouble with it. You know, places I go, it doesn't look like it's dying. The audiences are big. Maybe some of the other music is more popular with the average listener, the people that come up today, but got all kinds of people all over the world. But I know I've been in Europe a lot. In fact, I just came back from Israel, Tel Aviv, and the audiences, I mean, they love the so-called jazz in other countries. If they don't love it here, they must love it here also, because the festivals, they're all called jazz festivals, most of them. So the word jazz is definitely not dying, and the music itself is not dying. They got all of these schools teaching jazz. They got a lot of great players. They got a million young, great drummers and musicians in general. So I can't really see how it's dying. Maybe some people want it to die.
Oh, I would hate to see that happen.
Well, me too.
Elliot Forrest here for Leonard Lopate. My guest is Roy Haynes, the legendary jazz drummer. He'll be opening up Jazz Lincoln Center on September 25th. Your band is called Fountain of Youth Band. And do you see that as an incubator in a way that you bring in some younger talent and help them along the way?
Well, it seems to be. You know, not that I look for it. That title came from one of the CDs that I made, and they started using it, and it seems to be catching on a bit. Fountain of Youth. It has a lot to do with me, I think.
Well, as I mentioned earlier, in case they missed it, I'm looking at you, and I don't see 85. You're older than my dad, only by a few years. And my dad looks pretty good, and he goes to the gym every day.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah. So my dad is extremely vibrant. But you remind me a lot of him, extremely active and vibrant.
Sounds good.
Ashton Spann wrote into our show page asking Roy Haynes about Carmen McRae. She called you one of her favorite accompanists.
Yeah, that's indeed a compliment. Yeah, I did play with her a bit, too.
Got a story about Carmen McRae that you remember?
Yeah, there's a story, but I'd rather not go into it.
Boy, there's so much talk about.
I can talk about it.
No, if we're going to get in trouble, we have to take this off the air at some point, I think.
No, it's cool.
Let's talk about your sons, too, your family. You spawned a few musicians as well.
Yes, my oldest. It's Craig Haynes, who plays drums also. And the middle one is my daughter, Leslie Haynes. And she has a son that plays. His name is Marcus Gilmore.
So you got grandchildren who are playing.
I have, yeah, quite a few. And my youngest one is Graham.
And did you teach them, or do you give them a few pointers along the way?
Well, a few pointers, but I didn't really teach them, you know.
You've done a couple of projects with rock and roll, I think is interesting, the Allman Brothers.
Yes. Every now and then I would play at the Beacon or out at Jones Beach or something with the Allman Brothers. Yes, that was pretty exciting.
Do you switch the way you play at all?
Remember that commercial said, I'd rather fight than switch?
Yeah. Is that what you do?
No. What do you mean exactly?
I just wonder about your playing. Do you have to put on a different head for rock than jazz?
Not necessarily. Well, it's still, they would play something like da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da. So that's in 3/4 time. And you just swing to that, too, because you can be playing some rock and that can swing, too, you know. So when they start categorizing this or that, I just go and try to play the drums and make it happen.
Let's talk a little bit more about this Jazz at Lincoln Center concert coming up. I just love going there. I don't know about you, but to feel like jazz has a home in New York in such a wonderful place with three different venues, what are your thoughts when you enter that building?
Yes, quite exciting. Yes, I love it. I'm looking forward to opening the season at Rose Hall with this evening with Roy Haynes, as they're calling it.
And you got some special guests in addition to your band. Tell us a little bit about that.
Well, it's Kenny Garrett, who's one of my favorite musicians. Kenny Garrett, Danilo Perez, Dave Holland, and, of course, the big man at Lincoln Center. It's, you know, we know who that is.
Wenton. He's just got one name at this point.
Wenton. Okay, cool enough.
You seem so extremely active, maybe a CD almost every year.
No, I haven't been doing any lately because the last few, like I was saying earlier, were all nominated for Grammys. In fact, the last one, it was a drum solo called Hippity Hop that they told me the Grammys, that was the first time nominating a drum solo, which didn't win. Because Michael Brecker, I think he had just passed away then, and we were in the same category.
But that's quite an honor. Why did it take so long to recognize a drum solo, do you think?
Well, maybe it's the drum solo. You know, could be. I don't know.
I'm going to answer this question even before I ask it, which is you have no intention of retiring at any point, do you?
Years ago, I should say I was semi-retired. And when I started saying that a lot, the people believed it, and they started giving me more important places to play, I think. So that worked.
It's a good thing to put out.
Yeah.
And then just keep going.
But now, if I'm not at the airport walking around, it becomes boring, you know.
We're going to play some music. This is a segment. Can we hear that? And we'll say thank you to Roy Haynes for coming in. Once again, Jazz at Lincoln Center opening up at Rose Hall on September 25th. Roy, I want to thank you so much for being here.
And thank you so well. It's been nice chatting with you.